What's that?
National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. My name is Bernice Herzog. My respondent's name is Jane Haskell. This is Tuesday, April 12, 1994. Jane, let's go and finish talking about your graduate work at Pitt. Tell us about that.
It was a wonderful experience and a wonderful opportunity. I'm grateful to Pittsburgh for the opportunity to be able to study at Pitt with Walter Hovey. Certainly, if I had had my druthers, I would have been at Columbia studying with Meyer Shapiro, or I would have been at NYU Fine Arts Institute for graduate work in fine arts. But I had three young children, and I was able to go to the University of Pittsburgh for a class at 10 in the morning and be home when they came home for lunch from Linden School, go back to the library while they were in school in the afternoon, and be home when they came home from school in the afternoon. So it was something that I would not have been able to realize had I lived in a community where the university was not as accessible to me. And I do feel that the program at the university was very adequate for my needs at the time. I met Pat Ingram there while I was studying. I was very close to the faculty members. We would go out to lunch at the Webster Hall at noon together, and I was part of the round table, so to speak, where we would discuss art, philosophy of art, pertinent to what we were all doing, and had a very interesting life at that time in my profession, and became very close to both Walter Hovey and Virginia Lewis, who was teaching in the department. Watson Van Steenberg was also teaching in the department. Then later on, the year that I was writing my thesis, Jim Breckenridge came for a year and then went on to Northwestern. He was very helpful because he was particularly interested in contemporary art, and I was writing my thesis on the American Abstract Expressionists. All in all, it was a very gratifying experience.
Did you take any teaching courses along that line?
Oh, no. No.
Did you ever take teaching courses?
No. No. I did teach, however, because after I got my master's, Pat Ingram became the chairman of the art division at Duquesne University, and she invited me to teach 19th and 20th century, and I developed another course on women in art. I developed another course called Women in Art while I was teaching there. Pat is an architectural historian and also has background in the antiquities and in Renaissance, so that we complemented each other. Ann Peterson would also come down and teach night classes at Duquesne. She was teaching full-time at Winchester Thurston as the art historian there. And I did substitute once. For about a month while Anne was in the hospital with pneumonia, I substituted at Winchester. So I spent, I would say, almost 10 years teaching part-time at Duquesne University. Lois Kaufman also taught a class which we finally were able to establish in studio arts at Duquesne. They had no studio art program outside of the School of Education, but Lois did teach that class in the fine arts curriculum.
Did any of your students make a name for themselves in art?
I don't know, because we didn't have a master's program at Duquesne, and if we had a talented art historian, he or she would go on to either University of Pittsburgh or some other recognized graduate program in art history. We had many very fine students at Duquesne, as well as those who took the course thinking they were going to get easy credits, which they didn't get.
A few moments ago, you mentioned having three children and the difficulties that could be observed in going back and forth to the home and to school. Would you tell us about your children, when they were born, how they grew up, where they went to school, so forth?
Yes, this part of my life is somewhat bittersweet. My eldest daughter, Anne Frances Haskell, was born in New York in 1947 before we moved to Pittsburgh, and moved with us here to Pittsburgh when she was about 14 months old. Patty was born right after we moved to Pittsburgh. She was born in September of 1949, and I think I told you about that period of my life when Ed became ill with his first attack of glaucoma. And Judy was born in May of 1953, and we had three girls. Anne became a musician. She was an accomplished flautist. She was first chair flute with the All City High School Orchestra when she was at Alderdice. She sang in the choir at Alderdice, and one of her most cherished experiences at Alderdice was working with Virginia Lewis. Now, this is not the same Virginia Lewis who was an art historian at the University of Pittsburgh. This was a black woman who taught music at Alderdice, a wonderful woman. And Anne subsequently went to Eastman School of Music to study flute. Graduated from Eastman in 3.5 years with a degree in performance and in teaching, a double degree. She was a hard worker and she was a good musician. Somewhat disappointed because she was not being encouraged to be a performer. There were enormously talented people in her field, and the field was very limited in terms of performing jobs. And she went off to Boston, where she taught in the public school system. Just to backtrack for a moment, her teacher, and this is why she went to Eastman, was Joseph Mariano, who was a very fine flautist with the Rochester Philharmonic and one of the finest teachers at the time. Anne married John Landell after about 6 or 8 months in Boston. He too was a flautist who had gone to the New England Conservatory of Music, and he also made flutes and made ancient Renaissance and Baroque instruments by hand. He made silver flutes and piccolos. The marriage didn't last very long, and Anne became sick, and she took her own life in 1976.
She did not have any children then?
No children, no. That's why I said,
yeah,
speaking of my children, is a bittersweet experience.
How about Patty?
Patty is a Pittsburgher through and through. Never wanted to leave Pittsburgh. Did leave Pittsburgh for 2 years to attend the first 2 years of college at Casanova. Came back to complete her undergraduate degree at Duquesne. Married Lockwood Hale, who was a graduate of W&J. And at that time, Locke was doing his military service, and they were in North Carolina, I think, for a couple of years until he completed that. He went on to graduate school in theology at Union in New York. what is it called, Union Theological Seminary near Columbia University, where Patty went to Teachers College and got her master's degree in early child development. She taught at a nursery school in New York for the second year that Locke was completing his degree, and decided at that time that she really did not want to be a nursery school professional. She ran and taught a group of children in one of the housing developments on the Upper East Side. She went off to study weaving in New Hampshire for several weeks and came back a professional weaver. She and Locke then went to the master's school in Westchester County, and she was a house mother there. They had an apartment in one of the dormitories, and she wove, and Locke took some classes at Sarah Lawrence in photography, and he became a professional photographer, giving up theology as a profession. He does also write. And then after several years at the master's school, they decided to come back to Pittsburgh. Their son, Micah Andrew Haskell Hale, was born in 1981. He's about to be bar mitzvah on April 23rd this month. Unfortunately, Patty and Locke were divorced about 2.5 years after Micah was born. Patty continued her weaving profession, sold at all the local and national crafts fairs, would set up her booth and travel across the country to sell her weavings. That became quite difficult as Micah grew a little older and she didn't want to travel as much. And she now is the proprietor of a small shop right here in Point Breeze at the corner of Reynolds and Hastings called Gallery Wear, where she sells handmade clothing and jewelry and some craft, other crafts items.
She make wall hangings also?
She's not making the things that she sells. She buys them at the crafts fairs from her colleagues with whom she used to sell when she was weaving, but she doesn't have much time to do her own work anymore.
How about Judy?
Judy is the youngest, and she grew up primarily in this house. Patty and Anne were, I believe, 5 and 7 when we moved into this house, so that their very early childhood experiences were on Marlborough Road, which is a wonderful little dead-end street with lots of children. Judy had a slightly different early years because there were no children her age on this street, and I rather regret that she didn't have the kind of companionship as a little one that they did. They all went to nursery school at Falk and continued at Falk until Anne was in fifth grade. She put her foot down and said she wanted to go to Linden School, and Patty transferred to Linden School in third grade and Judy in first grade. Judy was not happy at Linden School and went to Mount Mercy School.
Academy.
No, oh, I guess it was Mount Mercy. Not sure whether the lower school was called an academy at that time. I don't know if it's even still there. But she, in about fifth grade, went to the lower school at Mount Mercy, and then transferred to what was then Our Lady of Mercy Academy in Monroeville, and spent her junior high and high school years there. Patty went away to prep school in her sophomore year and didn't like being away from home, came back and spent her last 2 years of high school at Our Lady of Mercy Academy. It's no longer in existence, but it was a very welcome alternative to the public schools for both Patty and Judy when they were growing up. And was a different kind of a student and had different needs, and did very well at Allardyce.
When the two girls went away to school, did they ever say that they encountered any anti-Semitism?
No, I don't believe they did. Most of their friends were not Jewish. In fact, both Patty and Anne married out of our faith. Although Micah, Patty's son, is being brought up as a Jew. Judy never married. Judy graduated from Our Lady of Mercy Academy in 1971 and went to Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri, where she got an associate degree, I think it's called, after 2 years, decided to take time off and spent time in Missouri, both in Columbia and then in Kansas City working, and then decided she would go back to school. I must say that all my children were a product of the 60s and had some problems, as many children did at that time, and Judy did go back to school in Kansas City, finishing her undergraduate degree, and then said that she wanted to do her graduate work in psychology and counseling. So she came east and went to Antioch, New England in Keene, New Hampshire, where she got her master's in psychology. And then, or during that period that she was working on her master's, decided to establish herself outside of Hartford, Connecticut, where there was another program in psychology which interested her. And she is, in fact, living there now and has been in practice, a private practice, for about 10 years, I believe. She has never married.
When the children were growing up, what type of, or if any, religious training did they have?
They were all confirmed at Rhodes Sholem. One anecdote I remember hearing long after the fact, that Anne cut Sunday school one day and her Uncle Bud saw her coming down the street in the wrong direction, and he never told on her.
Well, the girls were all artists of one kind or another.
Yes, I think it's a very strong influence in the family.
Tell us a little bit more about the factory that you had and when you moved, when your husband moved.
You mean Ed's factory?
Yes.
Haskell of Pittsburgh Incorporated.
Okay.
Yes, I think I told you that Bud had bought the business from two young men who were engineers, and they were on Penn Avenue in a very small loft. They then moved on to the terminal warehouses where their business expanded, and what they attempted to do was to reach the middle market in office furniture. Bud particularly felt that there were enough manufacturers who were very making an inexpensive, cheap product, and there were many in the high end who were making the Cadillacs of the market, but nobody was making a quality product at a middle price that the corner grocery store and the corner gas station could purchase for a good sturdy desk, file, cabinet, chair, whatever were their needs. And this was the market that Haskell originally entered. And over the years developed that market. The industry has since changed considerably. It's much more of a designer-decorator market now than it was in the early days. But what they were after was a good sturdy product that was not price too high for the average office or buyer. Ed was the factory man. He ran the factory while Bud was the sales end of the business. And they did an extraordinary job of getting along well together. They were both very fine people in business. And I think they were well respected in terms of their not only business acumen, but their integrity.
Is a type of that organization still in existence?
Oh, the company is still in existence. Bud retired, I would say, at least 10 or 12 years ago, and Ed bought him out so that Ed was the sole owner. And then in 1986, I believe it was, Ed sold the business to Joseph Wojak. And I'll have to spell that for you. W-O-J-D-A-K. Joe was Ed's president. Well, originally he was hired to be the financial officer of the company. Then he became, I think he was vice president of finance. Then he became the president of the company when Ed became chairman of the board. Then he indicated to Ed that he was interested in buying the company because Ed was getting to the point where he was seriously thinking of retiring. And Ed sold Joe the company in 1986, I think it was, and Ed had a 4 or 5 year contract and received half the purchase money and then was to receive the remainder. Unfortunately, Ed became ill in 1987, or late 87, early 88. We're not sure about the onset of his illness. And he died in June of 88 before he was bought out. So that I, in fact, have been bought out completely. I was on the board of directors before Ed retired, and then I went back on after Ed's death, while I still had an interest in the business.
Shame you didn't have any sons or sons-in-law that were interested.
It is too bad. Bud, in fact, has a son living in California who was at one time interested in the business and did work at Haskell for several years. And then he and his wife decided that they wanted to live in California. And they moved there, and he's a marketing professional now.
And the name of the company?
That's John S. Haskell, Bud Haskell's son.
Jane, could you compare for us the situation of artists when you first started and now?
Yes, well, the pendulum swings back and forth, of course, and when I first started, there was a lot of difficulty getting a show in a gallery, and of course that is true again after the years of the 80s when money was much freer and people were collecting and buying much more art. Now it's a little more difficult to sell. I see galleries in Pittsburgh. Some have closed. There aren't as many outlets as there were, fortunately. I still have a gallery both here in Pittsburgh, Concept Gallery, Sam Berkowitz's gallery, and a gallery in New York, AIR, which is a not-for-profit women's gallery. And it was first founded in the 1970s when women's issues were first becoming prominent. I think it's not easy for young artists ever. And it may have been a little easier in the 80s than it was, but it's not a profession that I would suggest to anyone who wants to make money, because it's the rare Andy Warhol who makes money. Most of us struggle on. And even with success, I would say that Ed and I used to joke that I could make enough to feed the dog and buy the dog food. Even with my commissions, which are money makers, I use the profits to plow back into my studio expenses to keep the building going, to heat it, and to buy my supplies. I even have to supplement it with my own funds, and I'm a so-called somewhat successful artist. It's very, very difficult profession to make a living. When we were first in Sam Rosenberg's class, if we were accepted into an exhibition, or if we were having a show, we never, never spoke to a critic, because Sam always felt that that was compromising one's integrity. This is no longer true. Artists are taught how to publicize their work. In fact, I believe there are courses now in art school where they're taught how to write their resumes, how to go to galleries, how to promote their work. I know that now I will call Donald Miller if I have a commission or a show and ask him to come and see it or whatever. Of course, not influence his opinion of it, but you, in the past, sat back and waited, whereas now young artists are taught how to market their work. It's an important factor now to make good slides of one's work, to have duplicate slides to present for competition or for a show, so that one can choose from. Most exhibitions and most galleries prefer to deal with slides rather than the original works, which become unwieldy. And particularly, the most remarkable change has been in format. Easel painting, when I first began, was still the prominent form of work. Since that time, or sculpture, of course, but since that time, there has been conceptual art, environmental art, installations, appropriation art, you name it, we've got it. And this is not something that can be presented easily to a gallery or an exhibition unless one shows either videotapes or slides. The field has broadened so that there's no longer, there are no longer specific categories in most exhibitions, such as oil painting, watercolor painting, drawing. Sometimes there are in the more conservative exhibitions, but as you've probably seen in past internationals, the scene has changed radically. In the 80s, I think it did go back to painting. I had an experience at lunch one day at Carnegie Mellon. I was introduced to someone who was teaching there at the time. This was in the 70s, and he and I had this violent argument. He said, easel painting is dead. Engineering is the significant art form of our century, and the aeroplane is the significant object. And I said, as long as anyone wields a paintbrush, easel painting is not dead. And I think I proved right.
You mentioned money and monetary return for your work. If this isn't too personal, could you tell us when you first started or your first commissioned piece of art, the amount or the area of the amount that was received compared to what somebody today could get for a similar, or you get for a similar piece of art? Trying to compare the prices.
Pricing is a very difficult thing to talk about. My commissions are all commissions from public agencies, and therefore they are public knowledge. My commission in the Pittsburgh subway paid me about $37,000. I think that's accurate.
About what year was that?
And that was I signed the contract sometime around 1982. for that commission, completed it in 1984. My contract for Boston was $42.5, I believe. My contract for Fort Lauderdale is a little more than that.
How about your first one, or do you remember?
Well, the contract for the subway in Pittsburgh was really my first public commission. However, I sold a rubbing, and which I painted into in 1957 out of the Associated Artists exhibition. I got about $50 or $60 for that. My oil paintings command somewhere, depending on size, somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000, sometimes less. By drawings, maybe $900. And that is not much. Pittsburgh prices are low by comparison with prices in New York, where I haven't sold anything anyway, so forget about my New York prices.